Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Monday edition. And if it's Monday, that means the Inno boys are in the house. Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke, welcome both of you to the Business Lunch.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having us.
Jim, I don't have you, though. Let's try one more time. Are you there?
Am I here?
One more.
Are we here?
All right. I got you. I know people have been talking about the fact we're in an unusual studio, so just didn't find you there. Should we just leave them off?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm here, guys.
Okay. So a week ago, you guys were in here, and we were talking about this U of I professor and his class called Election Analytics, where they had a foolproof way, or they thought they were much better than 538 with projecting the outcome. And Nate Silver at 538 was saying like 83% or something that Hillary Clinton would win. And these guys were saying 100%. What happened?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of pollsters and political analysts and data-heavy folks who are really scratching their heads, wondering how the data got it so wrong. And there were a lot of sort of varying degrees of certainty among a lot of different organizations you looked at. And these guys at Election Analytics were picking her at 100% as of October. By Election Day, it was 99.2. So it had fallen a little bit, but they have, you know, 99.2.
They had a little swagger about them.
Yes, they did. They very much had a little swagger, and they were very confident. Basically, I talked to the leader of this group, Sheldon Adelson, on the day after the election to kind of get a lowdown on what happened. How did you know? How do you go from 99% to 0%?
And he took the phone call from his bedroom.
Yeah, they've been great. Yeah. No, you know what? They've been great. They've been really great as far as like downloading people on what went wrong, and basically they narrow in on undecided voters. That's the one thing that pollsters cannot measure is people's who are undecided. So at a typical election, a week or so before, you get about 2 to 5% of people who are still undecided. This election, it was double that, in the low double digits of folks who were still undecided. And what Sheldon said is that basically what happened, a majority of those folks who were undecided swung very, very heavily towards Trump right. On Election Day.
Well, and so that brings us to these two other students that you write about at Chicago Inno at U of I, right? They're also at U of I.
Yeah,
and they've come up with a different, and they've got a little hybrid way to poll people or get to gauge people's reaction.
Totally. So they're the founders of a startup called TweetSense, which is a sentiment analysis company. And what that does is that mines social media and other internet comments to understand public opinion. So when we were talking about, going back to your question, Steve, what went wrong? What went wrong wasn't the analysis of polls, wasn't the analysis of data. It was an incomplete data set. It wasn't that people were reading this incorrectly. It's just that they were flawed. They didn't have the data. And looking back, yes, you should have probably prefaced all of these with, we should have understood the margin of error on all of this, but it wasn't there. But it wasn't the analysis. It was the data set. And what these guys are doing is they're kind of rewriting how polls are assembled. They're looking at a completely different amount of data. So when Jim was saying...
So they're not just calling me and asking me questions, right? They're looking at what I tweet and what I put on Facebook. And
your opinion is probably out there based on how you express yourself on Twitter, on Facebook, on internet comment feeds. That's the thing. Like, if you're really an undecided voter and you're hiding in a basement, not telling anyone how you feel, yeah, we're not going to know and you're going to trip up the polls. But for the most part, we know where you're leaning because the internet has made all of this so available and so accessible, and particularly our generation, the millennial generation, is so open to sharing this. And what these guys, they're harnessing that data to get a feel for where people are leaning. And this isn't the first time this worked. They were one of the few startups that accurately predicted Brexit as well.
I had a terrific and deep thought, and I've just lost it. So I don't know where I was on that. I know what it was. So you might not even know how you're going to vote, but your social media posts might betray you, right? Is that possible?
Well, whether it's you don't know where they're going to vote, or you're not willing to tell the pollster.
I know, but I want to go to where if you don't know. And if you don't know, people still might look at the way you behave on social media and be able to tell you what you don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that goes into the idea of an undecided voter. Are you undecided in that you haven't stamped something, or are you undecided in that you really haven't collected your thoughts on any social or public issue? There are very few undecided voters who are just like, I don't know how I feel about anything, thus I'm undecided. So I think to your point, that's exactly it, is that even if you identify as undecided, the things you're saying online have made you decide.
We did talk, maybe it wasn't with you guys, but I talked with someone about some app or something where they said they could look at your Facebook posts and tell you how you were going to vote. So what you're saying then is the future of polling is going to involve much more than just one-on-one conversations. You're going to have access to your social media.
That's what TweetSense believes.
And if they do that, they're going to have to really factor in for a lot of older people who aren't doing that, correct?
Well, yeah, and that's one of the things I disagree with them, is that when we were talking to them, they were saying that this is the future of polling, and I think the future of polling is all of this stuff. Don't throw away the polls. Don't dismiss TweetSense. Bring them all together. That's what's kind of baffled me about all of this, is the idea that we have to rewrite the rules right now, where the thing is like, let's use the rules and then add this new learning on top of it. But wiping how we do this,
we're such a whiplash
yeah,
sort of culture.
It's very knee-jerky.
You know, on Monday we may well have talked about the end of the Republican Party, or how the Republican Party was divided and how are they going to ever recover. And then on Wednesday, the very same people are having the very same conversation about the Democrats. So breathe deep. Time will pass. And then we'll talk about Will Flanagan riding a suitcase down the 606.
Yeah, I recommend it for anybody who's still in confusion.
That's next on The Business Lunch. Why wouldn't you hang around for that? It is 12:23 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand here, Monday afternoon on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for tuning in. Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke are in the studio as well from Chicago. You know, they come by and kill their lunch hour most Mondays with me, and I'm grateful for that. Okay, so I posted two things on Facebook recently. One was I showed you guys the picture. My wife's cousin is Irish, and he was in a pub in Dublin over the weekend, and he took a picture of this frame on the wall, and it's me. I mean, it looks like me at the age 65. I've shown it to people, and they say they've got the hair on their neck stands
up. No, I'm not going to sleep tonight. That was terrifying.
I did a double take. It was unbelievable.
Well, look just like you.
It's a bizarre thing. I'm sorry, Jim. I had your mic off again.
I'm just going to take off.
So anyway, I've got that up at Steve Bertrand Travel on Facebook, because my Facebook page is full. So Steve Bertrand Travel. But if you want to see that picture, it's very weird. The other thing that's equally weird is a video of Will Flanagan riding a moto bag, right? Moto bag. On the 606 in the park on the north side. I posted that. People have been commenting all over.
Awesome.
At Steve Bertrand. So
yeah.
We have talked about this.
We've
bag.
Talked about the moto bag. The moto bag is awesome. Right?
You're a huge fan now, aren't you?
It's motorized luggage. Picture a carry-on that you sit on. You pull up handlebars, you kick out some kickstands, and you go anywhere from 8 to 12 miles per hour, and it's amazing. I mean, you know, Steve, I woke up like a lot of people on Wednesday with a lot of questions, and I found a brief moment of clarity riding on luggage. It was glorious. And even though we've talked about this a lot, and we always kind of have a laugh about the moto bag because, yeah, it's motorized luggage. It's silly. But, man, there is some real engineering behind this thing.
You know, your hair was like Beyonce flowing in the wind.
Oh, yeah, it was beautiful. There was a lot of conditioner in that thing.
But you had a nice little clip going.
Yeah, no, you're not just going fast, but you can turn, we can zip around. You know, I was having a conversation while on it. We were filming, and we're able to go around dogs and moms on strollers.
You look like the Shriners in the parade.
Oh, I was cruising. It would probably be the lamest series of Too Fast, Too Furious. Like, yeah, you know?
So, yeah, my problem with it, or maybe are two issues. One, it might be a little too silly. Like, I get the practicality of it, and I get the usefulness of being able to kind of scoot through an airport, but you're also like basically on like a half bag, half like rascal scooter in the airport.
That's such a classic unbeliever. You know, like you gotta ride it to believe.
It was until Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, no, exactly. And just going back to that point of the real craftsmanship behind it. One of the lead engineers, he built the motorcycle that won the Daytona 200. So this isn't Jim, you and I putting a couple roller blades on the bottom of a piece of luggage and wiring it up. This is built with real craftsmanship. It's a great vehicle. I was able to spin. I'm a moto bag believer.
Okay, two questions. How heavy?
It's still heavy. That's something we've been working on. It's still 19 pounds. So, you know, you're zipping through the airport, but you're carrying a heavy
piece of
luggage.
And it's a carry-on bag, right?
It's a carry-on bag.
And how much?
How much? That's the other thing they're working on. Right now, it's around $1,000. So, okay. I mean, their market right now are for people who you know, really can't make their connections because they're not very mobile. You know, it really isn't for me who just wants to zip around the airport and have fun and bring the Fast and the Furious to O'Hare. But it's really helpful.
I don't mean to cut you off, yeah. but it's my show and I'm going to. But I want to move on because we've got less than a minute. And that's kind of a frivolous, not really frivolous, but kind of an out there thing. There are a couple of Iowa students who won a competition with a very real piece of technology, right, that might help pig farmers.
Yeah, 100%. Swine tech, and this is something I love about the technology we cover. I think it's sometimes easy to be cynical about, oh, God, another dating app or another app that helps you get pizza super fast. But, you know, tech at its core is solutions for problems. And a big problem that farmers have is that occasionally sows or female pigs fall or lay on their piglets, killing them.
Sows.
Yeah. Not a farmer. and they have designed technology, kind of a sensor for the pig that can sense the squeal that would indicate something like this is happening and send a shock that would get the mother pig up.
So, I mean, clearly, if you're about to be crushed by a pig, you squeal differently than if you're hungry. And so they can pick up on that. And when the machine or whatever it
when
is,
when it hears that squeal, that indicates, you know, danger. And Jim, you could probably do this squeal, right?
I'm not gonna do it. But I mean, the thing I love about this idea and this company is that, like, this is the kind of technology that would never come out of the Silicon Valley, right? They would never even think about addressing this problem. And you're seeing the impact of technology coming out of the Midwest addressing real issues.
Hey, boys, that's the beauty of where we are now, because anyone can do anything anywhere. And that's the biggest change from when I was your age to where I am now. It's pretty amazing.
The infrastructure to build is everywhere, and it's exciting.
Will Flanagan, Jim Dahlke, you can read more at ChicagoInno.com. Correct, boys?
Yeah, ChicagoInno.com, and follow our newsletter, The Beat.
That's it. We'll take a break. Kim Gordon will be here with a check of the news headlines. And Louis Lazar, this is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. I was just looking at on the news wires, and I look at a story on Bloomberg written by a man named Kartike Mehrotra about the fact that some Dodge truck owners now are making accusations similar to the VW diesel accusations or the mileage in the emissions and all of that. Kartike was an intern here at WGN Radio about 15 years ago, and as it happens, he's going to be in the studio with us a little bit later this week. So good for Kartike, and I'm sure that we will talk about Dodge trucks when he's by a little bit later. But right now, Louis Lazar from the Chicago Business Journal is here. Louis, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you.
That's a very nice jacket you have on. Doesn't give you an itch or hives or anything like that, does it?
No. Yeah, I really think about that, you know, my feeling for the American Airlines.
So what is the story about the American Airlines flight attendants?
Well, it's been slowly developing. I got some emails from concerned flight attendants about a month and a half ago saying they were having these reactions to the uniforms. And someone pointed out to me, you should check out what happened at Alaska Airlines 5 years ago. So I started looking at that and seeing the same company that supplied the uniforms to American had supplied uniforms to Alaska Airlines. It called all sorts of problems with strange reactions among the flight attendants. So I started putting two and two together, and it turned into somewhat of a big story.
And so they're They just had a new vendor, new uniform vendor?
They're using Twin Hill, which is, you know, got something of a history of supplying uniforms. They did Alaska Airlines. They've done others. But they've had problems with some of these people they've supplied uniforms.
And the numbers are significant, right?
About 1,400 that we know of to date.
Having some sort of, like, hives or itching or headaches or something like
right,
that.
Right, right.
And so what are they doing about it?
Well, they're testing and testing and retesting. I mean, this apparently it's a very elaborate and very costly to test these fabrics that these uniforms are made of. So they're trying to double check and recheck to see if any of the chemicals used in these uniforms could be that they may have overlooked in the previous test. But now they've even extended beyond the uniform fabric to talk about the packaging and look at the packaging that this stuff was shipped in to see if that could be having something could be rubbing off on the fabric. So I don't know. I had a meeting on Friday with one of the executives from American. I mean, they're not close to an answer yet.
But they acknowledge that there's a significant issue.
It's a problem, and they're concerned about it. But it's the kind of thing. What Alaska did finally, instead of that, when they apparently couldn't resolve the matter with Twin Hill, they just simply dumped those uniforms and went to Lands' End, which is ironically what Delta announced last week, or 2 weeks ago, that they were getting new uniforms from Lands' End also, which you don't think of as uniform supplier.
No, no.
But that's exactly what they do.
Okay, so that's American Airlines and their outfits. You wrote last week, and Mayor Emanuel is talking today about these new security lines at O'Hare.
Right.
A couple, I think, with American and three with United, or the other way around?
No, three with United, two with American.
And are these for... Explain... I read it. I'm not sure. You have to be a preferred passenger to benefit from this, or what exactly is
happening? Well, the American ones are open, I think, to the general passenger, but the ones that United are opening are just for the what they call the pre-check, the ones who've gone through that security clearance, clearance to be able to not take off their shoes and they don't have to undo their liquids and what have you.
But the idea is that this is more of an automated security check, so it will be faster?
Well, it's supposed to make it 30% faster. You put your stuff in these big bins, and it goes through. It does all the sorting out of what needs to be checked further and what have you, and you just sort of walk through once you've placed these stuff in these bins. So it's supposed to move the line much faster.
So the experience, other than the length of time in the line for a passenger, might not be that much different. They're still putting everything in a bin. They're still walking through the detector and all of that.
Well, the ones that won't, of course, are this. I was sort of curious why United just went with the pre-check people, because those lines tend
to
move quickly anyway. So I couldn't get a clear answer about why they just weren't using this in the pre-check lanes. But that, I guess, until they're sure it's working smoothly, they don't want to back up these regular lines too much in case there's some glitch in it or what have you. This way, if they have to sort out glitches, it will be easier in the pre-check. American, as I understand it, is going with it in their regular passenger lanes, the ones who are taking everything off.
And the mayor talking about it in light of the fact that we're beginning this busy holiday travel season, that because they were so embarrassed by the summer lines.
So whether this is a good time to test out something, I don't know. But, you know, they're going to give it a whirl.
You know, I take groups to Europe. We fly to Europe quite a lot, and often on Aer Lingus or Austrian Air. I don't think I've ever led a group on United. But you also are writing about the fact that they're passenger loads are down pretty dramatically on transatlantic flights.
Well, this is, you've seen this trend. I think it's accelerating now. Actually, for about the past year, there's been a decrease in passenger traffic, and I think a lot of it's related to two things. First of all, the continued threat of terrorism, which could pop up at any minute, and people are nervous about that. Plus, for Europeans coming to the U.S., the exchange rate is so abysmal now.
Right.
That has turned off a lot of people to visiting the U.S., which, you know, also works to drop the traffic level.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Did your reporting show, is it more us going there or them coming here?
Well, it's hard to tell just from looking at the numbers that I see in terms of thing, but it could be either. I mean, I think for Americans, the terrorism is the issue. For the Europeans, it's the currency exchange.
You had a big number. Let me see here. The internationally load factor was down 0.9% overall, but down a whopping 4.8% to 75.4%. on transatlantic routes.
Right.
What's down 75%?
No, well, I think it's 75%. It's down from 75. It's down to 75% from 80%.
Oh, okay. I got you. I read that wrong. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So while we're here, we're talking about Thanksgiving travel, shopping starts. What's your sort of gauge on? Well, we talked about Trunk Club before, but tell me first about Macy's. How's Macy's going to do for this holiday season?
Well, I mean, it's business as usual, if that can be said in the department store business these days. I mean, they're having their big holiday windows and the Christmas tree and the walnut room. But there is this overarching concern, I think, among a lot of people who watch the retail industry. The department stores are in for a very long struggle here, if they right. can survive. I mean, that is what some people are wondering, whether the department store template is something whose time has passed just because of this huge migration to the online
shopping. It is
shopping
just so
experience.
Easy. It's so easy. And I mean, I bought a couple things over the weekend, maybe that I shouldn't have, but I can just sit at my computer, click a couple buttons, and get what I need.
The one thing, of course, that is the more difficult for the online retailers is the clothing, because that is something people do like to see and experience. If you know what you're ordering already, then it makes it very easy to order clothing online. But for a lot of people, that's not the case.
Well, and Nordstrom had hoped to sort of expand when it comes to clothing with the Trunk Club, right? They purchased Trunk Club. Not working out so well.
Not well at all. I don't know where their heads were at when they made this $350 million acquisition, because they really were not buying anything but some stylists who were talking to people about what they might or might not want to wear. There wasn't a lot to buy for $350 million, and now they've marked it down $200 million, so I don't think the end is in sight yet. I mean, it's a very strange situation, and I think they're regretting their decision to go in that direction. Whether they make it at all, the Trunk Club, I think, is open to question.
So is the guy who came up with Trunk Club and sold it for all that money looking like a genius, or is he?
Well, he's looking like he's well healed now. That's
He's well dressed, isn't he? But you wrote that he's kind of got a chip on his shoulder a little bit.
Yeah, because I think when they was talking, I mean, prior to this whole markdown and the valuation of the company, there was the announcement they were closing their big fulfillment center, which I think was the first indication things were not going well. And he got a lot of heat because all these people were being put out of jobs at this fulfillment center over on Goose Island. Well, he came up with a notion. Well, they could just turn around and get jobs at Amazon. Speaking of online.
Right.
Which I think was sort of a very dismissive way of looking at all these people he was putting out of work. But he thinks the media should not be attacking him for these issues, et cetera, et cetera.
Louis Lazar, you can read more at bizjournal.com/Chicago. Thanks for coming by today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's time for the Business Lunch. 12:53 here on 720 WGN. All right, don't tell Ayatollah Martha, but if you were to, take the meat from the Ayatollah, you could probably eat for quite a while. I've been interested in this sort of prepper movement, and Michael Heidemann, the show's producer, and I have been talking about it for some time. And then, lo and behold, I hear advertised on WGN this company, Live Prepared, and they market food for months at a time, maybe even a year or so, that you can store in your house, I guess, if you're expecting something bad. Greg Allison is the vice president of marketing for Live Prepared, and he joins us on a phone line now. Greg, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. Glad to be with you.
All right. So who are your customers?
Our customers are, just your average American mom and dad, concerned about their family and wanting to make sure that they're safe and secure in the event of an emergency, whether that's weather-related or a power outage caused by man or something else.
But an average mom or dad or American isn't going to buy 6 months' worth of food.
Absolutely. And so you really want to think about starting off easy. And so, we have a variety of products that make it easy, from a 72-hour simple kit, to a one-month solution, and then you can go on from there.
And the idea is that if something goes terribly bad, you've got food in your basement that you can live off while the rest of us are struggling to find food.
that is correct. A lot of people think that the food in their pantry and their refrigerator is going to kind of get them through a situation. And most emergencies are 3 days or and some last even longer. And so if you kind of depend on FEMA or your local or community agency to come in and help you, you might be waiting a while. So best to have some food and some water and some supplies on hand.
Greg, I've got news for you. I could live out of my pantry for a few years. I've got soup mixes from 1986 in there.
Well, that's great. A lot of people kind of rely upon that and don't really look at expiration dates or rotating their food. And you might be surprised when that emergency hits. You may not be so happy to eat what's in there.
Okay, I got to ask you, because right now, if you go to your website, you have a countdown clock. You have a post-election sale, 12 hours and 4 minutes and 3 seconds left in your post-election sale. I'm assuming that was planned for whichever candidate won the election.
You know, it really was. You know, there was just so much anxiety out there that we've experienced, and our business has really picked up right before the election, and has certainly taken off since the election. Just a lot of people concerned about what's going to, you know, happen in the future, and just want to make sure that, you know, they're protected in case, you know, an economic crisis or political unrest, let alone a natural disaster. So it's been good for business, for
sure. Okay, so I'm going to throw this at you, and I'm sure you're prepared for the question and have an answer, but in some ways it seems like you're selling fear, too, that you're banking on people being afraid and because of that then buying your product. What's your response to that?
No, it's a very good question, and I have to admit there's a lot of companies in our industry that certainly play off of that fear and whatnot. But for us, this isn't about fear and uncertainty, and it's more of a positive approach, really, to kind of being sensible in emergency preparedness and feeling secure and knowing that kind of check that important item off your to-do list.
Greg, so
check the box, and you're ready for anything, basically.
Real quick, it comes with a tub with different dried foods in it, right, that you can either simmer or add water to, and it becomes something that you would eat.
That is absolutely correct.
What's your favorite meal in there?
Oh, it's all really good. I really like the chicken and rice, to be honest with you, and the fettuccine Alfredo. Really good stuff.
That's Greg Allison, Vice President of Marketing for Live Prepared. You can find more at liveprepared.com. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. Have a great day.
Good luck to you. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WG.